This Week in Accountable Care on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and I'm Greg Masters, known to some on Twitter as @2HealthGuru. I write about the accountable care industry at ACOWatch.com and am the principal producer and host of this broadcast. And joining me today are two of my favorite, shall I say, tweeps, since we originally met and continue to stay in touch off and on Twitter, as well as occasionally at industry conferences. Both are insightful doers turned industry observers and respected advisors. Dr. Jan Sidorov, a self-described blog vacateur, curates the Disease Management Care blog and has a Twitter handle of Disease Management Care Blog, which is spelled DISMGTCAREBLOG. And Vince Caritis, JD MBA, who curates the e-caremanagement.com blog and tweets via the handle of @VinceCaritis, and that's VinceCaritis. Both Jan and Vince write and talk about a range of issues in accountable care and the dynamics of this emerging industry, and now more about both Jan and Vince. Jan has over 20 years' experience in primary care, disease management, and population-based care coordination. He's a primary care general internist and former medical director at Geisinger Health Plan. He has the web persona of a blog vacateur with a wide range of knowledge about the medical home, disease management, population-based healthcare, and managed care that is only exceeded by his modesty. He has been quoted by the Wall Street Journal, Consumer Reports, and NPR's All Things Considered. He's a widely sought-after speaker. He is primary care by training, managed care by experience, and population-based care strategies by disposition, and we'll hear more about that. Vince's experience includes, he's the principal at Better Health Technologies, former president, Health Choice, Medical Call Center, VP Corporate Development, and VP Specialty Operations, St. Alphonsus Regional Medical Center, and Regional Director of Marketing, National Medical Enterprises, known today as Tenet. It's a hospital chain at that time with 100 facilities, and also Senior Consultant at Amherst Associates, a national healthcare management company. This Week in Accountable Care is brought to you by the healthinnovationmedia.com. We check us out on the web as we follow the machinations of emerging digital health or technology-enabled healthcare ecosystem from idea to business model. And today, we will visit the topic of clinically integrated networks, a rather timely topic, I might say, and their role in the accountable care ecosystem. So first up, let's start with you, Vince, since this topic originated between you and I, and following on an earlier chat that Jan and I had recently. What is a clinically integrated network, and why does it matter from the point of view of accountable care? Well, while Vince is trying to figure this out, Jan,
call me back in 2 minutes.
Okay.
With my apologies.
I'll add you back on Skype in 2 minutes. Okay. So, Jan, blog vacateur, rolling with the flow here. I just came from the last few days at the ACO Congress here. A lot of talk about ACOs, a lot of talk about clinically integrated networks. Let me pose that to you. What is a clinically integrated network, and why are we hearing so much about them in terms of accountable care?
As I recall, Vince will get into this, but the advisory board came out with a white paper that tried to distinguish between the two. When I think about the difference, ACOs typically are formed around the notion of risk and managing risk, typically upside risk. So if the ACO is responsible for hitting certain utilization targets compared to a control, an historical control, that translates into sharing of the insurance surplus that results from that. Many ACOs deploy and use clinical integration to manage that insurance risk. But you don't have to be an ACO to incorporate many of the principles of clinical integration. You know, the end-to-end alignment of clinical resources surrounding the care of a population, very adaptable in some respects to both the fee-for-service world as well as to the management of risk. And in some respects, you could argue that I would argue that clinically integrated networks can kind of do both. You know, they can walk both sides of that street. They can both manage risk in certain contracting with certain insurers, yet at the same time leverage their clinical integration to take good care of patients in a fee-for-service environment.
So I'm not familiar with that advisory board report, but I think back in the 90s when these series of statements were issued by the Department of Justice and Federal Trade Commission, it was really looking at, okay, managed healthcare is driving integration at the provider level. We had provider-sponsored health plans. There's a fair amount of consolidation going on to create pricing leverage for hospitals, and health plans are doing the same thing, trying to scale so they can extract more favorable price. So the origins of this stuff seem to be more in terms of legal guidance. And the question is, how does that jive necessarily with make sense clinically, whether you're talking about an ACO or a patient-centered medical home or just some association that comes together to do a better job of care management or care coordination?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I do know that the Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Justice and the state organizations that monitor, you know, anti-competitive behavior do use criteria to ascertain whether or not consolidation is really what's going on versus integration. I do know that over the course of the last 10 years, it seems the Department of Justice has, and the FTC has created, you know, certain criteria, safe harbors, if you will, that enable organizations to integrate without necessarily embarking in anti-competitive behavior. But you're absolutely right. And the as ACOs start out as clinically integrated entities, the question remains whether or not they'll turn into consolidated entities that are using their market power to command pricing from insurers in their network. It really remains to be seen how this works out.
So that's a good point that consolidation and integration are not necessarily the same thing.
Yeah, right.
And so much of the movement has been on this consolidation side and maybe a renewed awakening of the importance of integration, particularly on the care coordination side.
You know, and I've far be it from me to talk to what the Department of Justice is really interested in, but if, as I understand it, if the entity does a good job of demonstrating a commitment to patient care, including the patient-centered medical home, that can translate in the application, in the argument with the Department of Justice that you're really trying to do a good job here of taking good care of patients, but that does translate into some leeway from the department in enabling you to move forward as an integrated network delivery system. On the other hand, I can tell you that from where I sit, there's still some confusion out there about those criteria and whether or not simpletons like you and me, compared to Vince, who's got a law degree, by the way, can really navigate this and figure it out in a way without crossing wires and running afoul of the regulations that, you know, ultimately regulate this.
So just an update on Vince. I see him popping in and out here on Skype, and apparently we don't have a reliable connection with him. So, Vince, if you're actually listening to the stream, I'll encourage you to call back in, and I just put the phone number in the chat box. But in case you're listening, it's 619-393-2836. So let's go back to where you're sitting, Jan, because in my career, I've worked most closely with physicians, but I've also been in hospitals, both at the corporate and the individual hospital unit level. So I have the hospital perspective. I also have the perspective of the alchemy of forging provider-sponsored health plans. From Geisinger to where you sit today and what you're seeing, what strikes you as perhaps making the most sense and what makes the least sense in terms of the more enlightened activity we ostensibly see today?
Yeah, I don't have a good answer other than saying that I'm impressed with the amount of variation going on out there, which is a bad thing, right? The whole purpose of the healthcare reform movement is to rationalize healthcare. But when you go out to these markets and you examine what's going on, you'll find that in one area of a state, there'll be a variation of a clinically integrated network. In another area of a state or right next door, there'll be an ACO with some upside risk contracting going on with some or all of the local insurers to bundled payments, to capitated payments, with or without these providers forming licensed managed care organizations in some instances, like in Pittsburgh, buying, you know, healthcare delivery systems. It's almost like let 1,000 flowers bloom, and no one really knows which model is necessarily going to take root. My bet is that depending on the local culture, depending on the population, depending on prior billing patterns and referral patterns, as well as, I don't know, the motion of the stars and the rotation of the planet, we're going to find that what works in inland Florida is going to be vastly different than what works in Minnesota, than what works in Mexico. And I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing, that there's so much variation going on with, you know, horizontally integrated systems, vertically integrated systems, with or without managed care entities, with or without risk contracting, with or without, you know, regional consolidation, with or without virtual consolidation. It's all over the map. And there's no single lever here that healthcare architects can pull or push as the answer to healthcare reform. That's what strikes me.
So no cookie cutter, and variation might really be diversity at some level. But what are the some guiding principles here to assess what might be the best fit given the range of models? And I think we just got Vince popping. Let me see. Vince, might that be you?
Hey, can you hear me now?
Oh,
yes.
Yay.
There he is. Yay.
Awesome. Well,
sometimes technology creates more problems. Anyway, nice to join you, even if a little late.
Thank you. Well, it's been a challenge all around. But, you know, bottom line, we want to get this conversation in its whole on the record because it really is an important chat. So I actually teed up that question that I wanted to start with you, Vince, and that is, going back to what is a clinically integrated network and why does it matter from the point of view of accountable care, and why is it so central right now to the conversation we're hearing around accountable care?
Well, I've heard bits and pieces of the conversation as you've been trying to get me on the line, and Jan's done an admirable job. I'm going to just hit a few of the highlights here and the bullet points, and then we can see if we can take it from here. You know, ACOs, Accountable Care Organizations, are getting all the attention. where in the shadows there is this other construct around clinical integration that really needs to be as much, if not more, front and center than does the whole idea of ACOs and accountable care. And the term is not meant to be used generically. It's a legal term, and I hesitate to say this, but the term clinical integration really was created by the lawyers. It was defined in 1996 by the Federal Trade Commission, and the purpose was really to help organizations of doctors and hospitals to be able to contract together and also to be able to avoid antitrust at the same time. The statistic, I don't know if you have mentioned it, but I think that really got this on my radar screen fairly recently. The advisory board, which is a major consultant to most large U.S. hospitals, has been tracking the number of clinically integrated networks. Their count as of the year 2005 was 8. And as of 2012, they were tracking over 500 of these clinically integrated networks. So that I think, is really the essence of the signal to be paying attention to. I did hear Jan say very correctly that there is a lot of overlap and that a clinically integrated network can progress to become a more formal ACO. But it doesn't have to, and that I think the takeaway here is that providers, you know, having established 500 of these, are really getting the message about the need to become accountable, and that fee-for-service is going away. So let me pause there, Greg, and I know that's probably recovering some of the ground you guys have already covered. Loop me back into the conversation here.
Well, what was obviously this advisory board piece you're referring to? They must have had some indicia that they used or criteria that they used to actually say, "Yep, that's a clinically integrated network." How are they defined in this respect?
You'd have to ask them, and most of their research is proprietary. So I don't have the answers to those questions, but those are the right questions to be asked. A clinically integrated network, like an ACO, is a legal entity. So somewhere down in the courthouse, there's going to be a registration of the members of the entity, which are certainly going to include a number of doctors, and in most cases probably would include a hospital. The confusion comes in that I think that there are a number of organizations out there trying to track what's going on in accountable care, and the Levitt Group and Oliver Wyman are two of them. They seem to both be doing a pretty good job, and their count is at 500 ACOs. And what I would love to see would be a list laid side by side of the 500 ACOs that are identified by Wyman, Oliver Wyman, and by Levitt, and the advisory board's list of 500 clinically integrated networks. My hunch is that there would be a lot of duplication, but that there would also be some probably a fair number on the advisory board list that are identified as clinically integrated networks but don't show up on the list of ACOs necessarily. And if the folks out there listening are confused by all of this, I think that's probably the right reaction, because it is all very confusing and there isn't standard terminology, there aren't standard definitions, and we do have, fortunately, a number of companies tracking the field, but they're tracking it all in very different ways.
So this would be somewhat characteristic of a immature industry that's in a rapid growth cycle.
albeit some of the, at least what I just heard at the ACO Congress is particularly using the Levitt data, is that the, at least from the count from an ACO perspective, they're somewhat leveling off, but that doesn't necessarily include what may be out there in terms of an otherwise clinically integrated network. So, Jan, you mentioned that, you know, we were talking about consolidation is not integration, and that variation may be also otherwise expressed as diversity. What would you see from a clinical standpoint? What might be, you know, the five or six or whatever the number may be, key considerations to be considered clinically integrated?
You know, the main one from my point of view is the ability to take on some level of insurance risk. I think that's one of the major breakpoints. And I don't believe that that is necessarily, that that necessarily means that you can't the full boat capitation type of arrangement. But I think that if you are agreeing to a global payment in some fashion, or you have agreed to an upside risk arrangement in exchange for sharing some degree of responsibility for the cost of care, that is really an exercise, in my mind, in risk transfer, the monetization of risk and sharing of risk and the dollars that come from the upside of managing that risk well. And if you're an organization, thanks to your integration, that includes the right kind of management of primary care, the right kind of management of specialty care, and all the ancillary services, not the least of which is care management, as well as the information systems that are necessary to do that, then you have crossed the Rubicon into some level of integration. And if you're really good at it, you can start entering into ACO contracts. But Vince taught me a long time ago and recently reminded me that another ingredient, I think, is the notion of platform. If all the components of the delivery system are sharing the right kind of platforms, not the least of which is health information technology, an integrated information system. It can take the form of an electronic health record. That's how it's usually done, but you could have a health information exchange, for example, inside the organization that allows doctors to see each other's notes from across town or from across different counties. I think that's an ingredient for integration. And then last but not least, which is a lot harder, so I have three of them, a lot harder is the whole notion of culture, that the docs, the administrators, the nurses, and all the other non-physician personnel are on the same page when it comes to the mission of the organization, understanding that, you know, it's not all about fee-for-service anymore, but this is really all about reconciling quality and reconciling cost, and understanding that from time to time, if you're going to deliver increased quality, it's going to take an investment, it's going to take additional cost, and, you know, if that's the mission of the organization, that's the culture of the organization, so be it.
Vince, any thoughts?
I have in front of me, I'll just read it and make it real quick, a list of what the FTC requires for meeting the definition of being clinically integrated. As I tick this off, it's going to sound a lot like an ACO, and that's where part of the confusion is. Here's some of the FTC's requirements. It's a select group of doctors, meaning it's not everybody in your community. You've got to have physician oversight. Typically, the doctors will be controlling the board, and the hospital will have more of a, they won't have a majority or a supermajority position. There needs to be performance metrics. There needs to be an IT infrastructure. There needs to be clinical redesign processes. There needs to be performance monitoring. There needs to be a payer-based incentive pool. Those are all the kinds of things that the FTC looked at in allowing doctors or doctors in hospitals who want to be clinically integrated networks to continue, and what they get to continue doing essentially is the joint contracting. The real difference is in the ACO you take on the population risk, and it's really a step before entire, you know, where the provider would become the insurance plan, but it's much closer to a higher level of risk that is taken on by the providers in an ACO versus a clinically integrated network. But you know, a key point here is if you're really looking to understand where is the status of accountable care in America, and you're looking only at ACOs, you miss a lot of the answer to that question if you're not also looking at what's going on in the clinically integrated network criteria. Because as John pointed out, these networks are really going to be or are becoming platforms for the hospitals and the doctors to be working together, and they're going to, in most communities, emerge first as a clinically integrated network, and they might evolve into becoming an ACO, but not necessarily. And again, if all that is confusing, that's understandable, but I think to really understand what's going on in accountable care in America, it's really oversimplified if all you're doing is a head count of ACOs, which are a much higher threshold of integration.
That's great stuff, Vince. And Jan, let me say, because we got a late start and we had some technical difficulties, if the two of you can continue, I will wind down the live portion of the broadcast, but we'll go on into an overtime segment if you're both available for that.
I'm available.
Sure.
Okay, great. So for the live audience, this is Greg Masters with This Week in Accountable Care. I've been speaking with Vince Kuritis and Jan Sidoroff, and we're talking about clinically integrated networks, and we're going to continue this conversation in overtime. Okay, we're back. We do have a live hard stop, but the entire clip will archive end to end. So two things. One is, going back to you, Jan, I was wondering with your love the outline of those key ingredients, and so as you were talking, I was saying, now is he wearing his medical director hat, or is this from the point of view of a primary care physician? Because she went straight to the whole risk, the risk bearing element, and then I'm going, okay. And then Vince, going to this these indicia, you know, absolutely right on, and certainly forward and sensible, you know, from an accountable care or any entity perspective that's going to assume this risk transfer, all that makes sense. And then you push the platform idea. So let's talk about platform, because if anything seems to be different today, it's the crowd would sing. Now the old king is dead.